One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Everybody, and thank y'all again so much for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, before the Easter Bunny drags him off, Mr. Kyle Felsen.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in Skeleton Studios. I got an exciting show planned for everybody. We're having a guest on. We don't usually have guests on, but it just so happens we have one today, and I think you're going to enjoy it. Cam, I know you enjoyed talking to him.
Oh, dude, he's a Lone Star Brethren, right? Like, that's what it is. From down deep in the heart of Texas, our brother, the paranormal roundtable man himself, Josh Turner.
Yeah, that's right. It was very, very exciting.
It's great.
Very interesting. I wish I had his abilities to perceive things and see things.
No joke.
I don't, right? I'm just a dunce. That's the way I make
make
my way through life. Speaking of dunces, one of my sons starts his driver's ed today.
Oh, thanks for the heads up.
Yes, everybody in our town needs to watch out. Learning how to drive. You remember those days? They do it different now than when we were in school. When we were in school, we took it through the high school.
Yes.
Now, I know that some of the people out there, they probably still do it that way, but not around here, not anymore.
I taught my kids.
It's privatized everything.
Yeah, we went and paid, but I taught my children how to drive too.
Yeah.
My wife and I did.
Well, and it's a different thing because, like, my kids grew up in town, in the city, and so they've never really been behind the wheel. Where by the time I was 16, I had already been driving tractors, I already been riding dirt bikes, I already been driving cars for years because we would just drive them in the pastures down old gravel roads. There was nobody out. The cops didn't care.
No.
Remember that old Granada we had?
Yes, I do.
And we would wear helmets and we would jump it out in the pasture. I mean, just totally destroy this thing. My parents didn't care because, I mean, it was like a leftover car that somebody gave to us. I think it was, you know, if you tried to sell it, it might have been worth $200.
Maybe.
So my dad we welded a roll bar inside there, roll cage, and we would just bajaw through the pasture, right?
That's right.
Scaring the horses and the cows and everything else.
Getting it slideways around behind the barn.
we did that for about one summer, and I think then the thing was totally trashed, and then we just had a wrecker haul it off.
Yeah, I think we ended up doing something to the transmission.
Metal.
I don't remember what it happened, but I don't think it'd go back in gear after a few weeks.
It was a 1981 Ford Granada, and it was the ugliest color yellow.
But it was tough.
Man, that's when they still made cars.
Dude, that thing was like a tank.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, it was huge. The thing probably weighed like 5,000 pounds.
So great.
It was about 30 foot long. Like, you wouldn't even be able to park that in one of these modern garages. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, no. It was literally like a bike.
Why did that ever become a thing? Where, like, there through the, like, 50s, starting in, like, the 50s until, like, the early 80s. Or maybe it was like mid 70s. They were like, the cars just kept getting bigger
like
and bigger.
Like those old Lincoln Town cars.
Yeah.
I loved those old cars,
man. Those are pretty dope.
Man.
Suicide doors and stuff like that.
Those things are killer.
Yeah.
So are you ready to eat peeps? I know you're not really. We always make jokes. You're not a peep eater, but your brother is.
My brother loves peeps. Those nasty marshmallow
things. One of the many
things
wrong with him.
I can't stand them.
No.
No, my kids, everybody in my house is old enough now where we don't really participate in the egg hunting or anything anymore. Now, my wife still, of course, would get the boys Easter baskets and put candy and knickknacks in there, you know. But where we're going, there will be kids, little kids hunting Easter eggs.
We've got
stuff.
A bunch of littles with the granddaughter and all the greats running around in there. So it's going to be madness for this Easter. I can just feel it. Speaking of madness, Brad, I got something to share with you.
Okay.
So, you know, I love headlines, but I know you love headlines, right? The ones that grab you in. So this is something that we've discussed about if you could be saved, right? We always talk about what if you were by yourself in
saved
the woods?
Saved by like Jesus? Like, what do you
no,
mean?
No, no, no. Although that would be something to talk about this week. No, 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 no. I'm talking about like if Big Feet was to come to your rescue.
Oh, right? I got you.
So I found this out. This is our brother Lange posted this up. It says that a Florida skunk ape saves a man from certain death in the Everglades.
Okay.
Here we go.
Do tell. Do tell.
Get a load of this. Says that a fellow named Anthony Cross wrote about the time Bigfoot saved him from certain death. Says it's 1982, and I just ended my time in the Army. After getting home, I found nothing had changed. That and my experiences in the service left me in a poor mental state. I love the outdoors of camping from an early age, so I foolishly decided that camping in the Florida Everglades would give me the peace of mind I desperately needed. After 3 days, I'd had enough. I packed up my gear and headed out, only to realize that I had somehow gotten myself lost. There were about 7 hours of daylight left, so I climbed to the tallest tree I saw to get my bearings. Well, this tree was pretty thin, and just as I saw the way I needed to go, I slipped down and fell a little above about 15 feet. And my knee and ankle were sprained very badly, and the pain was nearly unbearable. See, that's always my fear, right? Climbing up, and then something silly happens. You're like, oh, great, here we go. So it says here that I limped as far as possible in the direction that I needed to go, but soon I couldn't stand because of the pain. So finding the path leading out here, says I set and started scooting backwards as best I could.
Right?
Makes sense. It was hard going as the path was made of crushed shells and gravel. But an hour later, I saw a large cat come out of the bush. It slowly started towards me, much like a house cat does when it sees a bird. At this point, I'm feeling very vulnerable and unarmed, and I knew I was in trouble.
So it was a panther.
It's what it sounds like. And it says each time I scooted backward, it would lunge or sort of flop its front paws. Craziest thing I ever saw. It was about 10 yards from me when my right came from over his right came a rock about the size of a softball flying horizontally like a missile. It struck the side of the cat's head so hard that aside from literally exploding, it folded this cat backwards and then slapped up against its body. Said, I heard the crunch and saw the blood mist on impact.
It's like the big unit out there throwing fastballs.
Hammering.
Remember when he hit that bird, that pigeon, and
it
exploded?
Smoked it. Yeah, just it blew up like a pillow. Now it says here, I swear every single word is absolute truth. I looked to the right and I saw him standing there just inside the tree.
Yorheim. I know Yorheim.
Massive dark hair covered everything except his face. It was dark, but easily human-like, and we made eye contact, and at that moment, I felt very calm. And to this day, I can't be sure if I heard or just felt safe, but I, and he says, quote, heard that word inside my head. I looked back at the cat, and I thought it made a gurgling sound. I still don't know, but when I turned back, my savior was gone. I was replaying everything in my mind when I heard a crack at 5 o'clock. As I turned towards the sound, a long, thin stick came flying out of the trees, landing a few feet behind me. I never saw or heard him after that first moment, but I was positive he threw me a crutch to help me get to my feet and make it out. Over the years, I held the experience to myself alone, knowing I'd be looked at and or locked up, looked at funny and locked up if I had told anyone. There are bad apples in every species, but people need to understand they have compassion for us, I believe, unless they are attacked.
Yeah, I like that idea of Bigfoot being a tree hugger, being nice, gentle.
A druid.
Now, maybe he wasn't really trying to help you out. Maybe he was using you as bait and you just happened to be in the middle of his hunt for large cats.
Or maybe he's a bad throw and was trying to cave your skull in and missed and just hit the cat behind you. I don't know. I like to look. I love the idea of druid Bigfoot.
Yeah.
I always have, like we talked about. It makes sense. It makes sense that he's the keeper of the forest. It's just how this is supposed to be.
Yeah, because if Bigfoot is as big as they say he is, and he was very dangerous, I mean, there'd be a lot more people getting killed and wiped out by these things, right?
But the idea of it being there to save you, and I like the idea of it throwing you a crutch, this whole thing.
And he could feel like a message being sent to him telepathically.
Yes.
You know, you hear people that have those experiences.
a lot. There are a lot that has to deal with the fact of, and you know, it's not just Bigfoot. It's a lot of things that we talk about. It's somehow you instinctively know its meaning or its ill will or goodwill towards you. You can instantly feel the intuition coming off of it, right? Like you just know what it is. It's very weird because you don't do that around your friends.
I think Bigfoot is fae. I think he's a big fae. That's what I like.
Man,
to
you know what? I think you are spot on. I don't know how it could be anything other than that. I know, and we've discussed it, and we'll discuss it till the end of time. People want to believe it's a flesh and blood animal, but I just don't know how we haven't come across more of it if it's flesh and blood all the time.
I agree with you. 100%.
I don't know. It makes me crazy, but I love the idea of Bigfoot being like a woodland savior.
Yeah, yeah. Check this out. It says, hello, gents, first.
Hey-o.
Thank you for such a greatly entertaining show.
Hey, thanks.
Second, my apologies for the length of this, but I wanted to paint a clear picture. I was stationed on a Navy submarine base from 1987 to 1989. I was part of the Marine Corps Security Force team, and our job was protecting certain tactical weapons. I had a few odd experiences during my 2 years there. The main area we guarded was 3 square miles,
ooh,
surrounded by 2 rows of chain link fence that were separated by 50 feet and topped with razor wire. The wire, as we called it, was broken up into 50-foot sections. Each section was numbered and had multiple sensors that triggered alarms. There were stadium-type lights that faced out of the wire, so the entire inside was almost pitch black, and the outside brightly lit up. The dense tree line outside was cleared back about 100 yards. There were 3 60-foot towers, with a searchlight on top, bulletproof glass, gun ports on all 4 sides, a locked door at the base, spiral stairs, and a trap door up top made of bulletproof metal with a gun port. I'm 5'1", and I had to stand on the heater box to see out the windows, as the bottom of the glass was 5 foot. We were locked and loaded at all times while on duty, as it was a live fire restricted area. Basically, if you come over the fence, you will get shot. I was on the 12-4 duty in one of these towers the night this happened. A sensor tripped, and I investigated with my binoculars. I saw a person standing outside the first wire, but I couldn't see any features, just a silhouette of what looked like a lost hunter, which happened occasionally. I figured he looked like this due to him being close to the wire and the lights shining past him. I radioed to control that there was someone outside the wire, and a mobile was dispatched. Mobiles are trucks with 2 Marines, Alpha driver, Bravo passenger. I jumped back up on the heater and watched the mobile approach and deploy, the Bravo in the shadows, and the Alpha drove closer and turned on its lights. Now, we drove without headlights so as not to give away our position. We did this all the time. When he turned the lights on, the guy was no longer there. I had been paying attention to the mobile and the deployment, not what I should have been doing. The Alpha and Bravo searched the area with a spotlight and radioed command that it was all clear. The mobile then drove back to the tower. As soon as it stopped, the alarm triggered again in the same spot. I could see the Alpha look over and could tell that he saw the guy. The mobile raced back to the wire, and my binos was on the guy the entire time. Right when the Alpha turned on his lights, the guy disappeared. I was in disbelief. The mobile came back to my tower, and instead of broadcasting on the radio, we spoke through a tower gun port, me yelling down, then moving my ear in order to hear. We were discussing what each of us saw when the alarm triggered again. The Alpha yelled up that he saw him, and he took off. I jumped back up on the heater, and I was locked in on this guy. This time, when he hit the lights, the guy stayed for a fraction of a second. Then he wasn't there. What I saw in that brief moment was what looked like a dark shadow of a person, but with no face, no texture, or anything discernible. Just a flat black shadow. The mobile came back to my tower, and we did the gun port thing, going over what each of us saw. The rest of that shift was one of the most tense times I ever had. I was constantly watching that area and hoping to not see anything. When we got off duty, the mobile and I were pulled into the corporal's room and asked what the hell was going on. We were all hesitant to say anything, but the corporal let us know that he'd seen his fair share of odd stuff at that duty station also. So we told him what happened, and he said he'd cover it in the report. Everything was logged. As we were finishing up, the corporal pulled me aside and said, "You know, I just realized the lights hit the bottom of the outside fence, so it couldn't be he was dark because of being backlit or anything." We both got the shivers, and nothing was ever brought up officially about it again. There were plenty of guys that had this thing happen to them, several that I was witness to. Thanks, Spanky, Echo 4 Lima, USMC. Well, Spanky, first and foremost, thank you for your service.
Word.
Second of all, thank you for the very cool story. So they saw like a shadow being that was tripping the alarms.
That, dude.
And it was like it was toying with them. They'd wait till the Marines, the two guys would go all the way down there in the Humvee or whatever vehicle it was, side by side, click on the lights, and it would be disappeared. So the second time, he's watching intently and sees it happen. So this, what is that?
I've got a list of them. The next episode we're going to do is going to be a bunch of crazy military sightings like this. Because it's funny that there are a lot of them. The military guys, man, it's like these things like to mess with them. It really is. It's not just Bigfoot or just shadow beings. I'm going to tell y'all, next episode, there's a lot of crazy military sightings.
Well, that sounds interesting. Also very interesting is the interview we had a pleasure to do.
Oh, yes.
Let's take a break. And when we get back from the break, we're going to be talking to our friend, Mr. Josh Turner. Stick with us, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
All right, y'all, here we go. We've got a treat. Our Lone Star brother down there in Austin, holding it down for us, the king of the paranormal roundtable, Mr. Josh Turner. Josh, thanks so much for joining us, man. What's going on?
Oh, not much. Just wanted to talk to you guys. Been wanting to talk to you guys for a while. I was mentioning earlier that you guys were partially responsible for my, you know, to inspire me to actually do a podcast. And I guess we all know that it's a lot harder than it seems. I think everybody wants to do one, but like my friend David Wedley says, just because you can don't mean you should.
That's 100% true with a lot of things that I've dabbled in my life.
Yeah, I think a lot of people think that it's easy because you're just talking, but they don't really see what's behind the scenes, right? That the finished product is like only 10%. It's like the tip of the iceberg compared to what's going on in the background.
It's like they say, the fight's the fun part. The preparation's the part that's no fun. That's the difference, and that's what it is here. But that's why we got you here.
Yeah.
You have got so many stories. First of all, folks, it's the Paranormal Roundtable. Jump on YouTube. This is where you're going to find him. If you like creepy stories, Josh has got miles of them. Miles of creepy stories. from Bigfoot, Dogman, Ghost, anything. If you like this show, you're going to like that show. And so, like you said, you got into it from, sadly, listening to us, and I'm sorry for that whole thing, but you must have had, and you were talking about it, I want you to share with everybody, an experience or whatnot, any experience that you might have had that kind of drew you to this in the first place.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. What I was telling you guys before, you know, was that my grandmother called it Ojo de Paro, but she told, and that's my aunt, that I had that. She died when I was real young, when I was like 2. And my tia Jova was kind of like that was her sister. She was like my surrogate grandmother. My mom's Hispanic, my dad's Caucasian. But the legends and stories that I was told as a kid, with my tia, we would be going down to San Juan to light candles, you know, and pray and all this stuff. And I just thought, oh, I hate this long, boring trip, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was, my mom would be like, we're going to do it. And you're going to pretend like you like it. Okay.
Right.
So I just had to do it. Me and my sisters would go down there, and my tia would entertain us. And she would talk about stories like Manos Paludos and all this, which is the hairy hand, La Llorona. And, you know, as a kid, some of it was scary, and it was fascinating. But then I just thought, at the end of the day, this isn't real. The hombre lobo. It's not a real thing. I thought the hombre lobo, which is the werewolf, so I thought it was just make-believe. But my tia would always say, mijo, this is real. Like, these stories are real. But you got to understand something. She also would watch, like, luchador wrestling, you know.
Yeah, that was great.
She would be like, you know, if there was a wrestler on there, there was like a priest, you know, and he would wrestle, and he would, like, cast out the demon or whatever. And then she'd be like, that man's going to go to hell for hitting that priest. So, you know, I thought this woman is
great.
She believes in all this stuff that's not real. You know what I mean? So I thought that that's what it was. But then everything changed for me when I was 15 years old. I think even before that, I lived in a house where there was some paranormal activity going on, but it didn't affect me as much as it did like the females in my house. Mm-hmm. And so I wasn't like as affected by it. But the thing that happened to me on October 31st, which was Halloween on 1990, me and my friend Daniel Robles, we were actually walking home from hanging out, whatever. And I was in trouble. I broke my curfew, and my mother was pretty aggravated. And I've told this story a bunch of times. And it was, you know, I knew I was in trouble. And so we were walking home. I said, my mom's going to be so mad, dude. As soon as we walked in the door, his mother's like, your mom called. And we didn't have cell phones back then, 1990, you know that.
You had a quarter.
And yeah.
For us.
Yeah. And my mom
phone.
Even said that. She goes, you couldn't use a payphone, pendejo, you know? And I was like, I'm sorry, right. Mom. And so she's like, look, I don't care. She goes, you need to get home now. And I was like, how? Are you going to come get me? And she's like, nope, you're going to walk. And so Taylor, the streets at night are pretty, Taylor, Texas, where I'm from, is pretty dark. And you know, and I didn't mind walking home, but even back then, as a 15-year-old, I was a little thug, you know, and I had enemies, and there were some enemies in between there where he lived and where I lived. Like families of people you don't get along with certain families, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And so there were some that didn't like me, and I wasn't always the nicest guy, and they weren't either. And so Daniel, he said, you know what, let's run to Circle K real quick, and I'll walk you halfway to our friend Henderson. Henderson, Daniel Henderson, we call him Henderson because his name is Daniel too. And he would work on bikes with his brother Andy. And so I was going to pick up a bike, and my buddy was going to walk me there to my other buddy's house. And then I was just going to grab one of the bikes that he kept outside of his little house, because he actually had a little house outside of his parents' house. And we always thought it was the coolest thing, because he had his own little house. And so I was going to knock on the door, pick up a bike, and then ride home. So we go down to Circle K, we get those really big, like, drinks, like, I don't know, 44 ounces of sugar or whatever it is. And we're walking up the hill. And I'm sitting there complaining, you know, about how mean my mom is, when really and truly it was a very liberal curfew. She told me to be out by home by 11, and she thought for sure this kid could get his butt home by 11, but apparently I couldn't. And she was pretty aggravated, and I was like, man, I hate this. I'm going to be grounded, blah, blah, blah. I'm complaining. And we see this thing sitting in a ditch that we thought, at first thought it was a dog. And the neighbors had a black German Shepherd, so we thought that's what it was, but it was huge. And when it turned its head, I told my friend Daniel, I said, dude, that dog don't look right. I was like, I don't think that, because it was a female German Shepherd. It was kind of skinny, but that's not what this was. And I said, this thing has a humongous head on this. What is this that I'm staring at? And I'm sitting there looking at it, and then it stands up, like on its hind legs. And then when it turned its head, it looked right at us. I said, oh my gosh, you know, this isn't a dog. This is some kind of wolf, something standing on its hind legs. And then it did something incredible. It came up out of the ditch and ran across the road on two legs. Hmm. And that was the introduction for me into what they call the hombre lobo, or my tia would call the cadejo. And I found out later on the cadejo is not the same as the hombre lobo. There's two different things. This thing ran across the road, and then it cut between the two houses. Now, there used to be a house, it's not there now, right next door, and they had a big, tall fence, and it was because they were drug dealers. Well, not a good neighborhood. And they had pit bulls, and I guess the city or whatever had made them put a big fence. And then they got in trouble. The cops came, and they got ousted, whatever, but it was vacant. And this thing went in between the two houses. It just showed up in between the two houses. And when I just remember feeling this burn on my neck. And it turned out that my friend, he was already like halfway to his house because we were right there on the corner. And he had ran past the neighbor's house. Like I said, it was vacant, the neighboring house. And I later on, I found out that burn on my neck was him ripping my shirt, trying to get me to move. And it was like time had stood still, and I did not realize that I was standing there, you know, frozen, and that there was this burning on the right part of my neck. And I looked down, and I remember looking at the cup of Dr. Pepper laying on the ground. I remember looking at the ice and looking at my shoes, and then I just look up, and I just like he was running. And he always apologized, like, hey, you know, I feel bad I left you, blah, blah, blah. But it wasn't his fault. I mean, he tried to get me to move. I just didn't move. And then when I tried to walk, I started to walk, and my legs felt like jelly. And then I finally got up to where the fence was, and that's when this creature was in between the two houses. It was walking inside that fence. Well, thank God it did, because it kind of looked like it was judging, like, how to get through the fence or get over to me. And then Sal, his dad, came out and yelled to me to come, you know, and so then I ran up to him, and I ran right past it. But I remember what it looked like. It was like a black, like almost like a blackish, smoky gray or black color, you know, I guess like a charcoal, they used to call it.
Yeah.
And I just remember like seeing this weird looking like foot, like this weird claw, like they got these humongous claws, the one I saw anyway. Like these humongous looking claws and these weird looking hands that kind of resemble a man's. The upper body looked like a bodybuilder of a man. I get a lot of Bigfoot reports, you know, and this thing to me always just kind of, it looked like a Bigfoot the way people would describe it, but with like a giant wolf's head on it. And then the backward bent legs with these giant claws. My friend Barton Nunley, he's the author I was telling you guys about. We always talk back and forth about who would win between that thing and a Bigfoot. And I always told him that thing, because that thing is like a Bigfoot, except it's got more weapons.
Yeah,
and I
yeah.
told him, I said, Bigfoot is strong, but that thing is built like a tank.
I mean, it's more huge. Built for fighting.
Oh, yeah. It's built like a giant mammalian raptor. I mean, you know, it just looks unholy, you know. And for years, you know, I always thought that it was like a flesh and blood thing. But then in 2019, I talked to his brother, and he was working on a house, which oddly enough was haunted. And we were in there, and somebody had killed themselves in that house. And while we were talking, the story about my podcast came up. We started talking about it, and he said, you know, have you ever told a story on the show about what happened to you? I said, no, but I've told it on other people's shows, and I think enough people have already heard it. And so he looked at my nephew who's standing there with me, he works on my show, Anthony. And he said, have you heard the story? And he goes, yeah. So when we started listening to him tell it from his perspective, it was pretty much on par with what I already knew. But he said something that I had never heard. Now, up to that point, you're talking about 29 years and a couple months. And I was like, he said there when it walked by the window, it had like a black vapor coming off the back of its neck.
Ooh.
And I was like, whoa, wait, what? Like, I kind of
like was taking it
back. And I said, yeah, like ethereal, right? And so I asked him, I said, could you repeat that? Because I've never heard this before. I was like, you never told me this. He goes, well, you never asked. And I said, yeah, because I just, all these years, I had assumed that he saw exactly what me and his brother saw. And so I thought, what the heck? Well, you know, what could that be? You know, like, what is that? And I just, I've always wondered, like, you know, why did it never dawn on me to just completely get everyone else's story on there? Because everybody would have had a different perspective. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And his dad even told me that one time out in the backyard, he saw something that looked like a black amorphous, like just like a black cloud that kind of formed into like a wolf-like looking thing, and it was swirling around. And he was in the backyard, and he like swung at it with a rake and like kind of kicked at it because it came toward him, and then it just kind of swirled and moved away. So my friend's mother, who died years ago, she always said that it was a diablo, like a devil, you know, the devil. She said, we saw a devil. It was a demon, you know. Mm-hmm. And I always thought, no, that's not what it was. It was something flesh and blood. But then in 2019, in December, when I was told, hey, this thing looked like it had some sort of weird black stuff coming, like a smoke coming off its back. That's when I thought, okay, maybe this is something we're not dealing with flesh and blood. And I was already starting to get a lot of reports of what we call dogman, just coming in, you know, with a lot of weird stuff that you can't explain from a physical standpoint. Now, there's all these people who believe that Bigfoot is flesh and blood, and that's fine, you know, if you want to believe that. But there's a lot of reports that point to it being something ethereal too, just like dogman. Now, I'm not saying that's exactly what we're dealing with, but that has got to be at least one aspect of it, because these creatures do things that don't make sense. They don't add up to it being some sort of physical, you know, there's just too many metaphysical anomalies that come with these beings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I agree.
And when you start, you guys know, you do a show, you know, when you go down that rabbit hole and you start interviewing all these people and you get all these different stories, after hundreds of people telling you the same thing, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire, you start to think, okay, what we're dealing with is not, you know, of the flesh and blood. And one of the things that I've argued with people, because I lived in a house for 10 years in South Austin that was haunted, and I've brought many people on my show, at least half a dozen, who've talked about the stuff that's gone on that when they lived there, and they've talked about that place. Witnesses, people who've seen things, and we know from the having lived in that place that these beings, or whatever you want to call them, they can manipulate you physically, even though they're based in a spirit form. They can do things, like they can open doors, they can slam things, they can break things. I was slapped on my back. One of my ex-girlfriends was drug out of my bed. That house had a lot of like anomalies, you know, anomalous paranormal activity, like things going on that I can't like explain from any like just normal physical standpoint. You just can't explain it. There's no way to explain it.
Right.
And so it made me realize, like one of the things that happened in that place, like all my fish died a couple different times. I had aquarium. I'm a big aquarium guy. I have like three of them here. But I had a big 55. I had a, well, to me at the time, it was big, a 55-gallon aquarium. And it was the biggest one that I had up to that point. And I had a bunch of cichlids in there. And I come home, and they're all dead. But they didn't just, I mean, like, I left, and there's like 10 fish in there. I come home, and they're all dead. like literally from going to like the store for 2 hours. I come back and I was like, what in the heck? The water was hot. But yeah, so it was like, it was warm to the touch. And so my brother was in his room and I said, dude, I didn't know what to think about that. I said, dude, did you do something to the fish? You know? And he was like, why would I do that? I don't know, but the water is hot.
Yeah.
And the fish are all dead.
That's so crazy.
And so there were things that would go on. One time I was laying on the couch and I was watching TV and I look over and the water just, it looks like somebody had taken a giant finger and it just swirled the water around and it looked like a little tornado was going on in the middle of my aquarium. And I'm like, what the heck? And my dogs were barking and freaking out. My brother had a cat that would like run and jump and hit the wall. Like it was either being chased or, you know, or chasing something. And so having lived in that house, I know that one of our dogs looked like he got kicked one time and these things can manipulate, you know, our physical world.
Did you ever find out the history of the house, Josh?
Like some... Yes, I did later on. Okay. And that's something I didn't want to talk about. But, girl that I had dated, she was like, I want to know what happened there. Well, it did turn out that the house did have a history. There was a homicide. Mm. And so that's what she told me. I never went and verified it or looked into it because every time I tried to do anything when it pertained to that house, it always seemed like I had issues pop up. And I just, you know, so I just figured, and even now when I drive by there, because, you know, it's right there off of a busy road. When I drive by there, I get this weird, creepy, like ominous feeling. And one day there was a guy out there checking the mail and I told my wife, I said, I had to ask him if anything is going on. And she's like, no, don't do it. No. And I was going to stop and talk to him, even though I had this weird feeling like I shouldn't. And so my wife said, no, don't do it. And she always gets this weird, creepy feeling when we go by there. And she has talked to probably a dozen people. And we've had about a half a dozen people come on the show and talk about it, but she's talked to probably at least twice that many people that over the years had experiences there, like my friends, you know, and my brother and his friends, the people that had experienced things. We had something that would run down the hallway and jump in and out of the mirror. First time I saw it, I'd already been living there for several months. And when I first moved in, I had two roommates. We all worked in a nightclub. And so when they were telling me, I was gone a lot. I was traveling up to Dallas. And when I would come back, I'd work on the weekend at the club and they would tell me weird stuff that was going on there. And I thought, you're working in a nightclub, man. You know what I mean?
Like, right. Yeah.
What are you bringing home on Friday and Saturday night that's making you see this stuff? Because I had a weird dream the first night I was there and then nothing for like a few months. And then a few little things started happening and I just kept chalking it up to like, okay, maybe I'm partying too much or something. I don't know. Maybe I'm working too much. I'm out late. You know, I don't know. It was weird. And then I had a roommate who was like out in his car and got to where he would refuse to come in until I got home. And my friend's girlfriend was like, look, you're gone a lot. You're not seeing what we're seeing. Then my brother gets out of the army. He goes and lives there. He starts making fun of everybody, like, oh, y'all like the little rascals, you're seeing ghosts, you know, whatever. Then one day, and my brother is like my older brother, you know, older brothers, he's pushy and he's annoying and he's always trying to be a smart mouth. And so finally one day I said, you know, dude, I noticed he hadn't said anything in a while. So I told my one roommate that he was one of the people that told my wife like a whole bunch of stuff. He died a year before last of brain cancer, a good friend of mine named Willie. And he was an African-American guy from, big old dude from Louisiana. He was Creole. And Willie was not afraid of anything, but something was in that room where he was at, and it was scaring the crap out of him. And he was brutally honest with me. He said, something wrong in this place. But the rent was cheap. You know, and it's awesome.
Yeah. I wonder why. So we were something, right?
Yeah,
great.
I mean, the rent was cheap, so we stayed there. And I told
your roommate's Willie, that's the devil, yeah. But hey, it's cheap.
And then, you know, and if it's in Austin, you're like almost willing to put up with it. You know,
right.
It's like, you know, and so I said, what do you suggest we do? We go find another place because this is cheap, you know, and it's, and he goes, I don't know, man. I don't know if I can stay here, you know. So he got to where he wouldn't be there unless we were home. You know, one of us was home. And so, long story short, a bunch of stuff happened. We had this incident that happened two or three times, these incidents where there were doubles of people. We call them doppelgangers. People would see me, or they would see my friend Squid, that was his nickname, or my brother Diablo, that's his nickname, and Scorpion, who's actually, you know, he's the moderator on my show. A lot of people know who he is. Him and my brother Diablo work on my show, whatever. They had all seen each other. Scorpion had seen me. One time, I thought I saw Squid, and it wasn't him. And my roommate Pete was there for a while. He lives up in Colorado now. He's been on my show. He thought he saw me. I thought he heard me and my brother talking, and then he thought he saw my brother. And then when he looked at the clock, he realized that we weren't due home for another hour and a half, 2 hours, because the club closed at 2 o'clock. We wouldn't get home till about three. And then when we did come home, he told us, he goes, "Dude, I thought I heard you guys. I even thought I saw D." That's short for Diablo. He says, "Dude, I thought I saw you guys." And then he goes, it was so weird, you know, all these things that would happen. We would hear people calling our names in the middle of the night. And sometimes I would hear what I thought was a gunshot go off or a scream, and I would wake up. There's a lot of crazy stuff. And then, in you know, that living in that place, if you had any doubts about the paranormal or it existing, that pretty much quelled any doubt in my mind. And then I realized, you know, of course, you know, after the first year, I was like, these people that were telling me all this stuff, they had all moved out, you know, and then new roommates came and went. You know, everybody that ever lived there with me had something happen to them. I can't think of one person that rented rooms from me there that didn't have something happen. My friend Loki, he's been on my show. He talked about it. Chief, he was a guy that came on. He talked about it, you know. I mean, he runs a jiu-jitsu school, and he's a guy that, you know, these aren't like a bunch of chicken, you know, scaredy guys. I mean, these are bouncers, you know, mm-hmm. guys are fighters. And they're terrified of all this stuff that's going on in this house. And, you know, some of the guys, they would leave, and then they'd come back, they'd leave and come back. And it wasn't like it was all the time. It wasn't like Amityville Horror, but it was like, it was well known that my house was haunted and that there was a lot of stuff that went on. Well, we had a couple different psychics, and we had this one lady from San Antonio come who was friends with our neighbors, and they came over and they said, "Hey, we want to check out your house," whatever. Well, their house was haunted too, because some guy apparently, I guess, had hung himself up in their loft. And so one night when we were pulling in, we looked up and to the neighbor's house, and we saw somebody standing there in the window. And I was like, I knew the people that lived there, and I was like, that's not the neighbors. And the neighbors were gone. They had left to go out of town for the weekend to like Fredericksburg or something. And I looked up and I was like, what the heck is that? And me and my friend Squid, we were standing there just in shock. And it looked like a very ghostly, pale looking dude. And then he just backed off. Well, then their daughter told us a couple days later, after they got back from out of town, that she was seeing a man that looked like that. And I said, "Dude, we saw it." So they had a friend that was psychic, and this woman was legit. Like, she came in, she pinpointed exactly where the spots were, that things were happening. She goes, "This mirror right here is the vortex." And I was like, "What do you mean?" She goes, "It's a vortex." And I was like, "Is that like a portal?" She goes, "No, it's a little different than a portal." She's like, "A vortex," this is what she said. She said, "A vortex is like a paranormal superhighway." And she's like, "And you have had someone doing things in this house that have widened it, made it stronger."
No, okay, thanks.
So my
I would have broke it instantly. Smashed out.
Oh yeah. Shortly after that is when I did leave. Like, it was about 6 months later. I was done. I left.
I'd hit it with some black rattle can and covered that sucker up and then left. I'm out.
The problem was that my brother was a Satanist, and you know, he makes no bones about it. He's born again Christian now, and he's turned his life over, and he tries to live his life, you know, correctly and whatever. And he's been on my show. And one of the things that he was doing was he was messing with stuff he shouldn't have been messing with. And there was already stuff in that house that had gone on. And we talk about all this on the show. If anybody wants the early episodes, we do a lot of talking about this. But he was doing things. And when he moved out the first time, there was a bunch of black candle wax on the floor. And I was mad. And I was mad about the black candle wax. I wasn't even thinking about it. My friend told me, he goes, "Dude," he's like, "that's black candle wax." And he goes, and then there was this little table that obviously he had, was like an altar that he was using. And so when I talked to him about that, and I said, dude, were you doing like messing with stuff in my house? And he admitted it. He said, well, yeah, but it never worked. I said, no, it did.
Yeah, for real.
You definitely. There was some stuff that went on. And then he, you know, when he came back, he had to deal with it. And, you know, and it was funny because he was making fun of us about, you know, because he wasn't seeing anything. And then one day something did happen to him. And that's when he admitted to me, you know, this was prior to him moving out the first time, that something that looked like an old man with no legs. He said it looked like just the torso of a man was grabbing him in his bed. And that's why he had quit making fun of us. And then he quit dabbling and messing around, but damage was done. He had already, like, you know, opened up whatever it was.
The genie's out of the bottle at this point.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, completely, yeah. And so this lady said, you know, you need to get a cleanse and do all that. Well, I met this guy. His name was David. And he worked at this, which actually this place was haunted too. It was right up the road. And it was a, they made it into like a place for homeless people that could have a place to live. It was like subsidized housing, but it was made from an old rest home that they no longer use as a rest home. And it was very haunted. I saw a lot of weird stuff in there. I never saw any full bodied apparitions or anything, but I saw weird stuff. And I heard noises when I do my patrol because I was doing security there. And so this guy was really, really spiritually in tune. And he said, dude, you got issues, man. You got stuff going on at your house. I never told this guy anything. I never told David anything about this. And he goes, dude, you got some weird stuff going on, man. You know, you're going to need somebody to help cleanse it. And I'm like, I just looked at this guy and I said, this is my third day there. I said, you don't even know me. Like, how do you know anything about me? He goes, trust me, I do. I know. And so one day when I was standing there talking to him, I felt something tug my pant leg. And man, I'm telling you, there was nothing there. And I looked and he goes, yeah, you got stuff around you. He's like, you need to get it off of you. He goes, your brother practices, or he goes, he used to practice black magic, but he's got that, he called it essence because it's on him. And I said, well, you know, he wants to get saved. He wants to be a Christian. This guy was Buddhist by philosophy, Christian by faith. That's what he was. And so he said, well, I'll come to your house and I'll say a prayer and I'll do this. Well, he did. He came to our house that weekend, after the second week that I knew this guy. So I took a chance to let him come over, and he literally did this prayer, and he did this movement with his hand up and down over my brother's back, not touching him. And I watched my brother's feet come off the ground about 2 inches. I saw this with like four other people were right there when it happened, and it was unreal. And then after that, my brother said that it felt like he had removed something from him. And when I asked David what it was, he said that this thing that was attached to my brother was a reptilian spiritual entity. And that's literally what had attached itself to my brother. And that was weird. And then that sent me down this whole rabbit hole about the reptilians and what they were. And
so it's literally been part of your life this entire time that just led you to decide to start podcasting. You're like an antenna for it.
You're one of those special people. Yeah. I firmly believe that there are certain people in this world that are sensitive to this type of thing. I have an uncle who's like that. Like, he's seen strange stuff his entire life, where I'm a dope. I've never seen hardly anything. You're one of them, though. And I mean, it sounds like you've had a whole lifetime of different experiences.
Yeah. And the thing is too, like when I was getting started with the podcast, I hadn't met a whole lot of people that had seen things like me, but I noticed when people were with me, they would have experiences, you know, while they were with me, and they would see it too. But then, you know, and I always thought, well, maybe we're all seeing this, whatever. But my friends would tell me, no, dude, we only see it when we're with you.
Yeah. You're the antenna, man.
Yeah. And so what I really believe, and I firmly believe, is that this stuff is around us all the time, but it only manifests itself, you know, at certain times, and certain people are able to see it. Thus, the oho, you know, that it's the eye, you see it, you know, and the oho, the bottle means the gift of the eye. which I never looked at it as a gift. I always thought it was like a curse. But as a kid, I know there were a lot more incidents, dude, and I just think a lot of it I shut down or shut off because I didn't want to think about it, and I didn't want to be scared. You know, I'd be laying in my bed, and I'd be afraid, and especially in this one house I was telling you about where it was like it affected the females in the house more than it did me, but I remember seeing this thing walking down the hallway with like five or six of them. I guess it was about seven of us in that room. We were all little kids, and we were all piled into my bedroom. It was a pretty big house. We lived out in the country. My dad had finally gotten, you know, he retired as an engineer from Samsung a few years ago. And he had finally gotten a really good job working at the power plant out in Rockdale. So we had moved back to Central Texas from West Texas. And we'd finally gotten a nice place, you know, and whatever. And my parents were happy. We got a big place. But a bunch of weird stuff happened in that house, and there was a pond next to that house, and we found a bunch of dead cats in it, which was just really disturbing to me as a kid, as like a 9-year-old kid. You know, we had literally like 8 or 9 of them in that pond, and I'm like, what are these people drowning, these cats, or what are they doing? And so my dad kept telling me, stay away from that pond, you know. He didn't want to believe in anything, but something had to have happened because we moved abruptly. Like my dad worked shift work, and he was on the swing shift, I guess, the graveyard shift where he works. And so he was sleeping in the afternoon, and I come home and he's just frantic and they're moving. And what's crazy about it was he kept poo-pooing that anything was happening. And my mom kept saying, there's something going on here. You know, she's like, my sister, my aunts will come over and stuff. Bunch of weird stuff happened to him. My sister had her friends on a sleepover. A bunch of stuff happened to him. And it was targeting the females. But there was this one night, it was the night before Thanksgiving, and we were all sitting there asleep. And we wake up to this loud thud, and me and six of my cousins, the boys are in one room, the girls in the other. And we see this shadow of what looked like a large man, just solid black. And he was dragging a bag behind him. And we all saw this, you know, and we were just like, what is that? And one of my cousins was like, it's Santa Claus. And my other cousin was like, that ain't Santa Claus, man. And so we all just kind of were like terrified. And so we were just sitting there. And I remember even with the heater on, like we could see our breath. And I remember being terrified. And I just, that was one of the memories that just really stuck with me about that place. But there were like periods of time where I don't really remember anything happening until I got older, and then I had that experience with that creature, which I thought at the time was a flesh and blood creature. I think now it wasn't.
You know, that's interesting, that story, because a lot of in Latin America is the stories of the sack man.
Mm-hmm.
Or the hombre de saco or whatever. And it's like, it's popular in Spain and other Latin countries. And it's described similar as to your just description you laid out, is it looks kind of like Santa Claus, but it's not. It's like a boogeyman, right? So that's interesting that you saw that. And before we started recording, you know, you were talking about me and you hanging out and coming around, but now you started saying about all the stuff people see when they're around you. I don't think I'm going to get anywhere near you, Josh.
Yeah, bro, we're going to have to just talk on the phone,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I don't think it's an all the time thing, man.
But all your friends don't say that. Yeah, that's the difference.
Has anyone ever interviewed you and then had a problem?
Yeah, exactly. I'm looking around right now.
Prank call.
Yeah. Hanging up. Yeah, exactly.
Well, you had mentioned off air, Josh, that you're currently working on some books, or you already have released some books. Please tell the folks about these books.
I'm working on them.
Okay, and describe for us what your work is exactly.
Okay, well, I started off working on, because Dog Man was kind of my wheelhouse, you know, that's how I got into the podcast.
Understandably so.
Yeah, and so I started researching it, and I was curious to find out what this thing was. I went down the rabbit hole, and next thing you know, I'm starting a podcast. It'll be 4 years in like a week. It'll be 4 years. What's crazy is that I started out writing one book, and then I started getting so many reports, and it was Dog Man, and I have a title, but I don't know if I'm going to keep that title, but it was about Dog Man and werewolves, and then it just started bleeding into Bigfoot. And the connector to that is this creature that people call a Gugwee. I don't know if you've heard of that. What the gugweed is this sort of in between creature that has like a, it's a big foot with like a, with a snout,
mm-hmm.
but it's got the straight legs, not the backward bent legs of the dog and like those hawk legs. And I'm getting over a cold. So I'm sorry about my throat.
Oh, no there, worries.
Yeah. And so I started writing it, and then I started, and I had my friend Ken Gerhard, a great author, him and Lyle Blackburn, really good friends of mine. And I was coming back from the conference we did last year in Tennessee at the LBO, Land Between the Lakes, where a lot of weird stuff happens pertaining to Dogman and Bigfoot. And so I was driving back with Lyle, a 10-hour drive back to Fort Worth, and then from there I rode with Ken Garrett all the way back to Austin. And so I was driving, and me and Lyle were talking, and he was talking about being an author, and I was thinking about getting out of the podcast thing because I was just swamped with work. And I really wanted to write, which is what I wanted to originally do. But I figured out that my fingers have all been broken. And so it hurts to type. And so I thought, I'm not going to be able to do this because I can't physically do it. And so I thought, you know, I need to get some sort of, so my wife bought me this program called Dragon Speak, which I can't, like, It doesn't always work correctly, so I've been having a hard time, you know, trying. So it's been slow going, trying to get it done.
They don't have a Texas version for us, because I've tried some of that stuff, too.
Exactly.
That's the problem. Yeah, I have to have other. Right. Once you say it, then you still have to have somebody proofread everything, because it doesn't know what you're saying half the time.
Oh, that's funny.
I can't enunciate enough.
Well, yeah, and if you can't say, you know, yuntu,
yeah,
y'all, yeah. You know, it's just kind of how we talk, you know.
Y'all, you all, but, yeah, y'all, all y'all.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so I had Ken actually told me, look, I'll help you with the typing and all that. So I started, and I enlisted Barton Nunley to do some of the interviews, him and Ken Gerhard. And Barton wrote a book called Inhumanoids, which I was saying off air, which was, If you haven't read that book, you got some great book about these creatures and what we're dealing with, you know. And so I read that book. It was an inspiration for me to write. And then I read a couple of Lyle's books, and I thought, man, these guys write really well. I don't know if I can match that, but I can talk good. So Ken was like, look, if you can talk, you can write, you know. And so I just said, okay, I'm going to write. And so I decided I was going to quit the podcast. I was going to go out with a bang and do the conference, and then that was it. Well, I came back and I decided we had to talk about it. I have a team, you know, it was my godsons, my two nephews, my brother, my best friend, and my wife. And we all got together and we said, what are we going to do? Am I going to quit this? And am I going to focus on writing? And they didn't want to quit the podcast. And then, and I had kind of announced it, and I had a big audience at that point that was like, no, don't quit. Getting a lot of like an outpouring, you know, hey, keep going. We like what you do. And so I said, okay, well, I need a break, you know. But then I decided I'm still going to write. And so I started writing, and then one book became two books. And now one of them is about Bigfoot, and the other one is Dogman. But they kind of blend together too.
Nice.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, and so it's going to be two books, and then I'm not going to rest on my laurels. As soon as that's done, I'm going to write the ghost book, which I have not, you know, I was talking to another author the other day about that, and that is going to be a daunting task because I don't know where to begin. It's such a broad subject. They all are. You got to kind of narrow it down. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
Well, that's and so I'm just going to have to write my experiences with the paranormal, I guess, in the ghost book, and of course, I also want to do a series about alien abduction because when me and Barton Nunley, we dropped 22 episodes together interviewing people. And one of the things that kept coming up over and over again, and we really noticed it when we interviewed Jesus Payan. If you haven't interviewed him, he's a pretty good guy. He actually used to be on Breaking Bad. Mm-hmm. He was Tuco's bodyguard.
Mm-hmm.
And a good show. I mean, you know, you guys know who the show and all that. But he told me that him and this guy, they were down in this canyon in New Mexico, and they saw this Bigfoot, but it had like this alien-looking creature kind of standing behind it. And I told Barton after the interview, I said, dude, how many of these people are we interviewing? And it starts off Bigfoot, Dogman, whatever, and it turns into alien abduction.
Right.
And I noticed that a lot of the investigations, now, I don't go out, I'm one of these people who, I don't like to go out and do boots on the ground, okay? I'll be first one to admit that. I'm not going to go out and tromp around, and I've seen these things. I don't want to see another one. I'm good. And I've been to a couple of locations. I went to a house with my brother and my friend and my nephew, and we had immediately, like, I'm talking like immediately we walk in, and they're like, well, sometimes stuff happens, sometimes it doesn't. We walk into this farmhouse, and this blender, one of those ninjas, you know, uh-huh. It just like goes off, and the lid goes flying up, and then the washer, the dryer starts kind of bouncing up and down. And I said, dude, what the freaking heck? And so I was like, okay, I'm good. I just turned around and walked. I said, I can't do anything here. I'm not a priest.
Yeah, I would have turned around and gotten my card and went home is what I would have done.
Exactly.
Done and done.
You guys give me the stories. I'll retell the stories, but I can't do anything for you beyond that. Their child had been seeing a werewolf-type creature coming to the window, and then he was seeing the shadow, which they all saw. And it was like it was the Hat Man. I mean, he had this, the hat and all that, you know. And this wolf-like creature was telling him to come outside and that he would protect him from the Shadow Man. And he was drawing pictures of it. It was a really crazy investigation. And one of the things I talked to Bart about this, and I said, dude, you notice, like, you go into this investigation about Dogman and there's this haunting going on, or there's UFO activity going on. And so it kind of brought it all together for me, you know, that I'm on the right track, I believe. And I think you guys are too. You know, you guys, you're not limited to one subject, because I do believe that compartmentalization is a big problem in this field, because you got the MUFON, the BFRO, you got the NADP, you got all these groups, and they're like, everything is this. No, it's not that.
Yeah.
Okay. It's all of the above. Everybody is not wrong, but not everybody's right. So it's kind of like this weird melding of the paranormal. Everybody's, you know, arguing about who's right and who's wrong. And I tell people, I was like, it's like religion, dude. A lot of religion is correct, but a lot of it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go back and you start to study a lot of these ancient religions, which I've done that, I've been delving into that, done a deep dive in the Middle East, and it helps to speak multiple languages too. But when you start looking at these different cultures, I think it goes way, way back into ancient antiquity, beyond what we could possibly fathom. And I think the answers are there. I just, you know, like in the Quran, I'm not Muslim, but in the Quran, it says that the jinn, those are the hidden ones, that they exist a right angle from us.
Right.
Now,
yeah.
We explain that physically on the show, what that means. You know, so what these people who wrote these books thousands of years ago, like the Vedas or the Hindus, you know, the Quran and the all these different books, the Kabbalah, all these, which is a book of Jewish mysticism. I've read all these books. That doesn't mean that I'm sponsoring or promoting them or anything, you know,
right.
I've read various books of the Bible, the codices, everything else, you know, from the Nag Hammadi desert, you know, all these different types of books. You know, the Sumerian tablets, you know, when you go back and you read all these and you study these different texts and you start to look at a pattern that we are literally just, when we're brushing up against the paranormal, we're coming up against the true reality, the true nature of what things are. And what we're calling paranormal is actually normal, but we have been living in kind of an isolated bubble, sort of like protected by an artificial building. Like, we've built a society artificially around ourselves, especially here in the West, where we've kind of insulated ourselves from that. So when we have a spiritual experience, we're actually, it's the opposite. We are physical. We think we're physical beings having a spiritual experience. We're actually spiritual beings, and we're here to have a physical experience. And when we have these spiritual experiences, we're actually encountering the true reality.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I'm at, you know, and so it took a while for me to come to these conclusions. It's not like I just woke up and said, oh, yeah, I think the world is really weird and blah, blah, blah. But there had to be some sort of rhyme or reason to it, because a lot of this randomness isn't really random.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree.
Mm-hmm. Because somebody was arguing with me the other day about science. And I said, you know, magic is just science that we haven't figured out yet.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a science, you know. And we were talking about Nikola Tesla and this one guy. And, of course, Facebook, that's the place to go to find all the right information. You know, this guy's on there, you know, he's heckling me about, oh, you're real scientific, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, first of all, I studied history, and you know, his science was like a sideline. I said, but Nikola Tesla, he talks about the God mind and the ultimate God consciousness. And he was, I believe he was on the right track, and he talks about the numbers 3, 6, and 9. Well, if you look at a lot of the different patterns of these hauntings, those numbers come up quite a bit. 3 in particular, you'll hear 3 knocks, boom, boom, boom. When I was on the Travel Channel, I did a show called These Woods Are Haunted. Michael Sheen, the producer, is a good friend of mine. He said, you know, I want you to come on, do the Church of the Forgotten. It's a good show, blah, blah, blah. You know, so it'll make for good TV. And I said, okay. And I brought him some witnesses for the third season. So I was the first episode, the first set of the first episode on the third season on These Woods Are Haunted. And I talked about this church that we worked security at, me and Scorpion. And one of the things that happened when we were doing the pre-interview, I was at one of my large accounts. It was a place where you go to play, I probably can't say the name because it's one of our clients, but you know, you go hit balls there and you can imbibe, and it's a big, it's like a golf range type place. And they're everywhere. So I'm just a huge 11,000 something square foot building, right? I'm on one end of it. My two guards are on the other end. There's nobody else in the building but me in that whole area. He introduces me to the director. His name's Roger. And we start talking. And at this certain point in the story, we hear bang, bang, bang. And we all stop. You know, this is the middle of COVID. So we're doing it through Zoom, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he stops and everybody stops. And they were like, what was that? I was like, I don't know, because I'm alone over here in this side of the building and there's no one around. So I radioed and I said, where are you guys at? And the guards were like, we're on the other side. You know, there were only two workers there over where they were at. And they were the guys that would get the balls and put them in the deal or whatever. And he said, they're about 30 minutes out from leaving. And the door was messed up. It wouldn't lock. So they were sitting over there. I said, okay, so you're on the north end of the building. I'm on the south end of the building, and I just heard 3 bangs, which I cannot explain. Well, when we did the interview where they actually recorded it and all that, and you have to sit there, you know, and not move, and it's all this, you know, uncomfortable, whatever. I get to the same point in the story, and we hear the 3 bangs, bang, bang, bang. And the makeup girl, dude, she, because everybody was like, sitting there and we all kind of looked and it sounded like it was in the hallway. And I personally don't know what I saw. It looked like a shadow or something. But Scorpion and my nephew and the makeup girl and one of the camera people all saw like what they thought was like a shadow, like moving down the hallway. And dude, she freaked out. So Scorpion was nice enough to walk her down to her car so she could leave. And I told the guys from the travel channel, I said, dude, that is exactly where we heard the 3 knocks. At that same point in the story.
That's so wild.
You can't explain those things. It's just a weird thing. It's just what happens. And it's like that.
What happens when you hang out with you? That's what it is.
That's what it is.
That's what happens.
Well, you know, Scorpion, let me tell you, if you go back and you watch that episode, Scorpion had his own. We had 6 guards, guys. We went through 6 guards, including me, my business partner, who's still my business partner to this day. We all saw something. Now, my business partner was reluctant to ever talk about it. Now, he's a boomer. He's one of those people. He's not, you know, he's typical. He's like, I don't want to talk about it. Well, we had to go to a mutual friend's funeral. We spoke out in Midland. We were going through Mason County. Now, we're going through Mason County, and I covered a dog man story out of Mason County. And so I started talking to him about it, and we're sitting there kind of bored. He's looking at his phone, and I said, you know, I covered a dog man story out here. Some kids that were shooting fireworks, and, you know, they're grown-ups now, but it was when they were young. And these 2 wolf-like creatures almost sounded kind of like baboons. I kind of wondered about that, if they were some sort of Dinopithecus or something. I don't know. That case was kind of weird. They chased them in their truck. So me and him started talking, and one thing led to another. We're talking about the paranormal. And I told him, I said, you know, to this day, you've never told me what happened to you out there at that church. And he was like, well, I don't want to talk about it. I said, dude, just tell me what you saw, because I want to know that I'm not crazy. I already knew, because I already had five guards plus Scorpion, which is six people besides me. Him, my partner, would have been eight altogether. Had something anomalous happen, like the weird anomalies happened to him. And he finally tells me, he says, dude, what I saw looked like a woman whose face was rotting off.
Ooh.
And I said, that's very, you know, if you go back and you listen to my episode, Church of the Forgotten, or you go to the travel show, you'll see what we're talking about. And I said, dude, you know, and so years later, we ran into that same contractor when we were working at a middle school when they were doing, they're redoing the band hall. And the guy's name was Al. And Al told me, he said, his wife had died of cancer. But before she died, he had told me, he said, you know, she did some research on that place. And then he told me what it was that he thought was causing it. I'm not going to say, I'll just let people go. They can go check it out, whatever. But you know, I don't want to give it away. But
sure.
He told us what it was. And I thought, holy crap, that makes sense. You know, like I did not, you know, it was a few years after that incident. And I told Anthony, my nephew, I said, dude, I think we figured out what it was, you know, why that was happening out there, you know. But now, unfortunately, I think they tore it all down. I think it's just rubble, because I had a friend of mine that had gone out there right after we had talked about it the last time. And he was one of the people that was involved. And he had no interest, you know, but he had a girlfriend that was like, hey, I want to see it, whatever. But they tore it down, you know, and thank goodness, probably for the best. And, you know, to let that just be, let the spirits rest.
Yeah.
Because, you know, but the point is that Scorpion, what him and those other guards went through was completely separate from me.
Mm.
You know, I wasn't there with them. We were all there by ourselves.
Yeah.
So, you know, stuff happens around me.
It
could easily happen to anyone. Oh.
That's right. Stuff happens around you. And luckily for our listeners, if they want to hang out with you in person and maybe see something, you're having a live show coming up soon. Tell us about that.
Close to us.
Yeah, actually, right there outside of Fort Worth, where you guys are from, it's going to be at Pecan Grove Center at Lake Worth. And that's going to be Labor Day weekend. And let me make sure the dates are correct before I stick my foot in my mouth, because I just confirmed that was 10.
We can adjust earlier. It'll be all right.
Yeah, we'll promote it.
We'll keep bouncing it around no matter what the dates are. I think you're right, though. I think it's going to be Labor Day, right?
And where do people go to get the
Labor
tickets?
Labor Day weekend, yep.
And where would they go?
Labor Day weekend is going to be Friday night for the VIP, Saturday and Sunday. And the tickets will go on sale, I think, early next week. And it should be on Eventbrite. You can go and find it. And we're going to have some major speakers. We had last year, we packed the house last year. We had about 500 people, which was the capacity. I think this year we're going to have something comparable to that, like four or 500 people that can, you know. So tickets are going to sell quick. They did last year. We ended up with, I think, like maybe 30 tickets left. And then those were quickly bought up by the people that showed up that didn't buy tickets on Eventbrite. And we sold out last year. So this year it's going to be same situation, except we're going to have more speakers. And it's literally, if you do the VIP, it's going to be a 3-day event. Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It's going to be a whole day Saturday of speakers. It's going to be a bunch of vendors there. Sunday is going to be about a half a day. And then it's going to be Friday night. It's going to be a VIP dinner catered by Thorndale Meat Market. And it's going to be chicken fried steak on Friday night, because that's a Texas thing, you know, guys. Mm-hmm, you know that.
Mm-hmm.
Barbecue Saturday and Sunday. And it's going to be a big deal. We're going to have Lyle Blackburn, Ken Gerhard, Nick Redfern, guys I mentioned earlier, Barton Nunley is going to be there, Sibylla Irwin, Ron Moorhead, Steve Stockton, just a bunch of people. My friend Josh Nocchio is supposed to come back from What Lurks Beneath. He's got a huge show on YouTube. If I've left anybody out, I apologize. There's just a huge bunch of people from last year, and it's going to be all of the same people, I think minus one or two who can't make it. And then a bunch of new people too that are going to be there. And so we're looking forward to it, and it's going to be big. Ron Murphy, he's another one. D.A. Roberts, don't let anybody out. I don't know. There's going to be a bunch of people, a bunch of speakers.
You can't keep up with all of them. It's too big.
It sounds awesome. And for people that want to go back and listen to some of your podcasts, tell them where they can find the podcast.
Sure. We are about to be going back to Spotify, but for now, we went up to about 175 episodes on Spotify, and then we stopped and we did like one, I think, and then, now we're going to go back. I think in a couple of weeks, we're going to be back to the 14 different platforms we were originally on. Those are the 1 hour episodes. We do them on Tuesday. Right now, though, we're just on YouTube, and you can find us on Friday nights. We do a live stream that comes on every Friday night. We do about a 2.5 hour show. I tell a couple of the guests of listeners' stories that they send me. And then I have a guest that comes on every Friday. And then every Tuesday, like I said, we drop an episode. It's right there on YouTube, too. It comes on Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. I think this past Tuesday, it was called Texas Werewolves. And next Tuesday, we're going to be talking about a black-eyed adult. I know you've heard black-eyed kids, but this story was given to me by a friend of mine who was in the Philippines, and he works out at the gym. And he introduced me to this guy, and he's like, I got a story for you. And we didn't talk about it at the gym. You know, when I'm at the gym, I'm all about business. But
Yeah, don't give it away. Like, make people have to tune in to hear it.
Yeah. But he gave me the story, so I'm gonna talk about that. And then this coming Friday, I got Dan Nadrello on there talking about Bigfoot. He has the White Bigfoot Project group, and that's going to be this coming Friday. So I don't know exactly when this is going to air, you know, but yeah, that's what's happening. And it's slated to whatever, you know. And then I think I have the week after, I think it's Jenna Grover from the Sea Squatcher. She's going to be on the show, and it's just going to go on and on. We always have a guest about the paranormal, or it's about cryptids. Just be looking for that.
Sounds good, man. Well, thanks for coming on and talking with us. We're definitely going to have to get together again.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
All right. Thanks, Josh.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. Hope you enjoyed that interview. We're going to have to do a lot more with Josh. Yes. He's an interesting guy. We could stay on the phone with him for hours and hours and hours. And
we're going to go down there.
I think so. I think we're going to go down to Austin and sit in studio for
do some live streaming with him down there in his studio and all that stuff. And of course, folks, you don't want to miss out on the Dog Man. This is going to be a heck of a little seminar thing, dude. 3 days worth of it.
Yeah,
it's
right
going to be a blast. And it's right here
on the west side of Fort Worth.
Yeah,
so it's in between our town and Fort Worth. So I will definitely be there. I know that he said several people that I'm friends with are going to be there, like Nick and Lyle and Ken. And
everybody show up. Y'all want to come talk some crazy Dog Man stuff and hear all, dude, it's going to be there. And all, like, everybody involved in it.
Yeah.
Is going to be there. Isn't it wild how much the dog man thing has really grown legs?
It has. Like, it has.
Because when we started, it wasn't as big a deal as it is now.
No, I mention it all the time whenever it's brought up. Like, one of my first stories I ever heard was behind the casinos there in Thackerville. I'd heard about it on the security camera. I remember the lost tape, remember of the guy running on all fours, but that was later proven to be fake.
I always think of the turkey hunter in Thackerville, that's what he saw.
And I remember the Beast of Bray Road. But outside of those few sightings, I mean, I wasn't very familiar with it. And it's just poured in and poured in and poured in. So much so that there's podcasts dedicated to only Dogman.
Yeah.
And so I'm excited about the conference because I'm going to be there. And hopefully I can meet some people with some really cool stories. Maybe I can interview them there. Ooh. Like bring, you know, you can bring the fancy camera and I can bring the fancy recording stuff. Or we can just take their information and have them on the show. But every time I go to one of those conferences, I end up meeting people that I otherwise wouldn't have. And I get their information and I get to have time to share their stories. And it's a lot of fun.
I remember, like we bring up often about that, the one where the sighting with all the dog men outside of the house, the two-story house, like around the field. And they
in Vermont or something. They even featured it on one of the television shows.
Those are some of the very first stories that I ever remember hearing. And now, then we had those fellas on that had it come into their camp and they shot it with the pistols and we had all that stuff going on. Like, dude, it's been wild to watch it progress to where it is now.
Yeah, I think it's demonic. And that's why bullets don't have any effect on them. It's almost like it feeds off of your fears. So, I don't know. It's a creepy topic. Very interesting, though. And so I urge you, if you're interested in that kind of stuff, you need to go check out Josh's podcast, The Paranormal Roundtable. Also, he's got a pretty good, pretty large thing going on YouTube. I think he does a show every Friday, he said.
Yeah, he streams all the time, folks. Y'all want to get on, y'all can ask questions. He's got all kinds of stuff you can talk. He's got, I think one of their most recent ones is called Texas Werewolves.
Yeah.
So you can get on there and listen to that bad boy. Also, too, Philly, how much did you enjoy the D&D movie?
I thought it was really good.
Man, it's fun, right?
It was very good because there's previous episodes of or versions of it were absolutely terrible. So, no, this was, even if you're not a Dungeons & Dragons fan, it doesn't matter. It's kid-friendly. Like, take the family. It's fun. I think everybody will enjoy it.
Yeah.
If you like Guardians of the Galaxy or any of those, like, type of movies, you're going to like this, right?
Without a doubt.
And if you are a Dungeons & Dragons player, then you're going to see all kinds of little Easter eggs, no pun intended, that you're really going to enjoy, right? Because you know, oh, I know what that is. Oh, I know what this is.
Yeah.
And I've heard you need to watch it multiple times because each time you'll spot new stuff.
You know, like, what? I could believe that. We need to go back and watch it again. We're going to have to.
I'm absolutely going to see it again. Maybe not in the theater, but I will absolutely watch it again. So.
Oh, I'll own it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to have to buy it. It's one of those that I'd like to have in my collection.
Very.
I'm a big, big fan. Yeah. Boiling eggs smells like boiled eggs and vinegar in my house. Right,
we got doing the Paws. Is that what it's? Remember that company, yes. Paws? Is that company even around anymore with the dyeing of the eggs?
Dude, they're still dying. Yeah, there's dye kits and stuff all over. Now you can like tie dye them, and now they got glitter. Dude, it's craziness.
My mom still does the Ukrainian pasanki.
Dude, she's so good at that.
Yeah,
that stuff is awesome.
She doesn't do it as much as she used to, but I've got those things all over. So
I remember watching your grandmother and her sisters do it.
Uh huh. Yeah.
It was wild back then to get to witness that. Like,
if you don't know what we're talking about,
a mean ass old Ukrainian woman over there working on eggs.
Yeah. So if you don't know what pasanki is, you can check it out. It's like P-S-Y-A-N-K-A-I or something like that. And basically what they do is they take an egg and they draw with a stylus. They use real beeswax. You draw like a pattern and then you dye it and see the dye sticks to everything that wasn't covered in the wax. So if you take a white egg, draw some pattern on it, dump it in blue dye, everything that was covered in wax will be white. And then you do more and you do the same process and it has like 10 colors. Then at the end, you remove all the beeswax and it's, you know,
different colored lines.
Thousands of years old. This was long before Paws, right? This is what these Ukrainians did. And
yeah.
Anyways, my mother's been doing that since she was
a child. Your whole family, the women are very good at it.
Very, very talented artists. Yeah.
And then there was Zora.
Yeah.
She was just mean.
Yeah, she was more of a seamstress.
Yeah, God, she was mean.
I'm getting excited because the Stanley Cup playoffs are coming.
Oh.
Stars are in it. I think they're going to end up finishing second.
Didn't they clinch their spot already? They're
definitely
in the whole thing?
Oh, yeah, they're definitely clinched. But I think, so they'll probably face the Kraken.
Oh.
Which I'm scared of the Minnesota Wild. I don't know, whatever it is, they don't seem to have a good time against that team. Where Colorado is a better team, but Dallas seems to play them good.
We'll see. It's going to be, it'll be really, really interesting.
I'm excited, right? There's nothing like playoff hockey.
No.
Like, some people I know don't even watch it all year, but when the playoffs start, that's when you watch it.
I'm some people, folks. Yeah, right? I'm who he's talking about.
It's insanity.
I never watch it until he gets pumped up. And when he gets pumped up, then I start watching hockey.
Yeah, and baseball started. Some of the new rules, I have to admit, I didn't like in the beginning, but I've come around. I actually like it.
I'm a fan, man.
I don't know how many pitchers and batters I've seen already ejected for, like, trying to exploit the countdown rule.
Oh, yes.
And it's just, it's funny.
You can see some teams have, their learning curve has been a lot shorter. So they have been able to figure out loopholes and how to make it work, whereas other teams have kind of struggled.
Well, I saw a thing, and this is before this is when I first didn't like it, but then I read an article on it, and they were showing how long the average game was. So, like, in the 1930s, a baseball game was only, like, an hour and a half long. Because they didn't have commercial breaks. They didn't have all that nonsense.
Yeah. Well, they had to stop and smoke.
Yeah, well, they smoked the entire time. And then it showed how it progressed through time. And then, like, as up and recently, like, the average time for a baseball game is, like, almost 4 hours.
It was, yeah, that's ridiculous.
So this is supposed to speed it up. Because people, that's why the sport's dying, is people don't, we got short attention spans nowadays. I ain't got 4 hours.
Yeah, I ain't got 4 hours to dedicate to just sit around and watch you guys play a game, bro. I'm like, come on.
Like your grandpa did. But see, your grandpa was retired. Before that, he didn't have time. When you're retired, you could sit back and get you an Arnold Palmer and listen to a four-hour Cubs game. It's not a problem.
Middle of the day, my grandpa would smoke a cigar, drink his coffee, and I think he would sleep from like the fifth inning to like the seventh inning.
Just take cat naps.
Yeah, and then he was there for the beginning and there for the end. The middle, he wasn't too worried about.
I hear you.
Right?
I hear you. Well, I know you're going to A&M for a ceremony soon. What else you got planned?
Man, that's about it. Besides what we've got coming up with all the kids and doing all that stuff, yes, my daughter is getting her ring from college, so we'll go down and check on all of that stuff. And that's about it. I don't have anything really, really wild coming up. I need to. We need to be going fishing or disc golf or something. This weather's getting too good, but sadly, we don't have time.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to be getting some time soon because on Thursdays, I have to take Caleb to his driver's ed class, which is like really close to the disc golf course. And I'm going to have to just hang out and kill time for 2 hours. So I'm just going to, me and Luke, we're going to go every Thursday.
Perfect.
While Caleb's at school. And we're going to go to the disc golf course.
Perfect.
Luke doesn't have the arm power or anything yet, but he still understands the concept, which is all you really need.
And that's all you need anything.
He likes, because he knows he can't throw it very far. So he usually likes to do the putts.
And
so
throw
and then, yeah, I let him get out there. Give him a buzz, right?
And then we're going to have to, we got to do some more D&D playing with him. He enjoyed that. So we got to jump on there and run some more games for him.
Absolutely. Well, I hope everybody enjoyed today's show. Before we get out of here, let's not forget about our sponsor. If you're looking for a simpler and cost-effective supplement routine, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. Just go to athleticgreens.com/expanded. That's athleticgreens.com/expanded. Check it out. You need to get you some AG1. Me and Cam love it. If you have any stories of your own you'd like to share with me and Cam, email the show expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the show 888-393-2783. Till next time, folks, stay out of trouble. I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.